Now, rich people have little to be worried about. In the US and Europe, there's a growing business of people investing in apocalypse survival. The apocalypse could be environmental or military or economic, but in all those scenarios, the elect few will take to their luxury bunkers to live until things get better again. Robert Vicano is CEO of Vivos, who kit out the bunkers. He's on the line. Afternoon, Robert.
Good afternoon, Sean. Nice to be with you.
To describe your bunkers, are they structures that would be mostly underground, entirely underground, or a bit of both?
Well, most of our structures are 100% underground, and they're deep underground. Although we've recently acquired a former Army military base in America up in South Dakota, which has munitions bunkers that are built at ground level, but they're then topped with soil, so they're buried under 12 feet of soil, which effectively is the same thing.
Right. So in a situation where your clients had to move into their bunkers, would somebody passing by not necessarily even know they were there?
Well, they're not going to be able to casually pass by. Let me explain that once we're in our bunkers and we've had to go in and we've had to seal the door, it's because you can no longer survive on the surface.
Mm.
So who's going to casually walk by and happen to notice a door and wonder what's behind that door?
Well, I suppose, does it not matter on the nature of the apocalypse? Because something apocalyptic might happen, but it might leave people homeless or with no infrastructure and, you know, sort of scrabbling for food.
Well, in fact, you're right. Not just most, but every scenario, every catastrophic scenario will have some survivors. And those survivors will be scavenging, pillaging, doing whatever they have to survive. And that means if you're another survivor on the surface, they're going to come and try to get what you've got. If you're in one of our bunkers, we've got defensive measures, every one of them. So it's unlikely anybody's going to get anywhere near one of our bunkers.
Right. And when you say offensive measures, how will you prevent people trying to get into the bunker?
Well, first of all, the blast doors can withstand a nearby nuclear blast, so I don't know how they're going to physically get in. But we have a number of security measures, and all I can tell you is think of something like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom as to give you an idea. I mean, there's just so many little things. But further, let me say this. We aren't going to seal the door and go inside our bunker until you can no longer survive on the surface, which means our security people are still on the surface. So if you're able to walk around freely, we too are. And I can tell you that they kind of look forward to the opportunity to make some examples of don't cross that fence. Don't come on this property. So, you know, that's the last thing we're worried about. And when we close that door, again, the last second, it's because you won't be able to survive. So, you know, it's a fallacy. Anybody thinks we're going to come by and we're going to block your air vents and we're going to blow you up and we're going to lock you in. Really? we find that comical.
The security staff, Robert, where do they live? You guys have shut the doors and you're safe inside. And are they upstairs getting irradiated or whatever?
No. The security guys are part of the shelter group. They have their own accommodations within. They are the ones that will seal the door. We don't lock them out by any means.
All right, okay. I thought that was extending loyalty to the nth degree. Who decides when the door should be shut? Because I suppose, you know, you could have a situation where things are bad, but is it quite time yet to lock ourselves in? So is there one person, is it you, who makes that final decision?
No, it is the security team itself with the security director. These are military guys, high ranking. In fact, our head security director is an active duty Army colonel in the United States. He used to fly Apaches and Sikorsky, the big giant Sikorsky helicopters in the Middle East. These guys are the real deal. They know what to do. And so they will decide. And that, again, that decision is made when, if they don't, they're going to die on the surface themselves.
Mm. Now, presumably, when you've made the decision to shut the doors, the assumption is you're going to be in the bunker for quite some time. Typically, or I don't know if there is a typically, but how many people are we talking about in the bunker?
Well, as far as time is concerned, we outfit every bunker for a minimum gestation of 1 year. But that could be extended by reducing the calorie intake, the amount of food we grow inside, et cetera. So it could be extended to 2 and possibly even 3 years. We have enough fuel supplies, water, medicine, and everything else. Mm. The size, the group size varies with the size of the shelter. So in Indiana, United States, we have a shelter that accommodates 80 people very comfortably, like a 4-star hotel. In Europe, we have one that's several thousand. In South Dakota, there's 575 bunkers, each one with an average of 10 people occupying. So over 5,000 people will survive at that facility.
Crikey. And is it an arrangement where these people, and, you know, they're all quite wealthy people, do they go there and do they treat it like a hotel, or do they have to muck in and do certain jobs?
Well, I think that's another misnomer that they're wealthy. Our typical client is middle class. And in fact, we have many that are in the poverty level, believe it or not. We have one individual who bought in who only earns $10,000 a year, which in America is poverty level.
Right.
He was still able to manage. He had some inheritance money, but he made payments. And, you know, so to answer your question, A, they're not the elite. B, everybody brings something to the table. Be it a doctor, he's providing his services, a plumber for if the toilet breaks, an electrician, the security guys, et cetera, et cetera. So everybody will help each other, and everybody has each other's back once we're in the shelter.
Mm. But if, say, you're a banker, that's not much use to anybody after the apocalypse.
Well, it depends. He could be a delicacy. You know, we'll have to decide then.
And so, as you say, it's built for a year, or it could be extended. During that period of time, presumably you have some sort of protocols in place to help people get along, to diffuse tensions, those kinds of things.
Oh, we absolutely do. In fact, we have psychologists at just about every facility, in some cases, two psychologists. But, you know, they're going to get along simply because the best of people comes out in the worst of times. One of the things we've done to assure the best environment is to make them as comfortable as possible. So we provide space. You know, the Red Cross says 45 square feet of space per person is all that's needed for long-term shelterization. But we don't go with that figure. Our figure is 150 square feet per person. And that's an effective amount of area. So it's effectively like an executive office, attorney's office or something. So we have all sorts of entertainment, libraries, theater, exercise areas, garden areas, game areas, swimming pools, you name it. So we're doing everything we can to make people just feel normal. But we get so specific about it that even the colors that we paint the walls are heavily or highly evaluated because they have to be comfortable, soothing, comfortable. These are not battleship grade metal steel boxes like you would have in let's say World War II.
Mm. Though presumably knowing that you're in one of these bunkers and that the world is ending outside, that's going to take a psychological toll on anybody, I would have thought.
Well, it is, but we don't know the world is ending.
Yeah.
In other words, there are dozens of scenarios, and we won't know how we're going to react until it actually happens. And what is that scenario? Maybe we're in a shelter. We only have to be underground for a week. Maybe 2 weeks, maybe 2 months. You know, if it's nuclear war, it's safe to come out with radiation after 28 days. But, you know, it just depends on what the event is before we can determine what the aftermath is.
Yeah.
But we do know this, that we're going to have the opportunity to at least come out and see what the world is like and hopefully restart.
And I suppose it's you could spend hours coming up with all sorts of hypothetical situations. But say in a situation where, you know, say there is no internet, there's, you know, a lot of things are broken down badly outside. How do you know when it's safe to come out?
First of all, God forbid there's no internet. I mean, geez, that's a terrible disaster.
Yeah, I'm talking a post Netflix world, Robert. It's as bad as that.
Yeah, well, no, and no radio. I mean, yeah. Can you imagine having a radio show? So the point is this: we're going to do the best we can with what we got. We don't know what is going to be still available to mankind or on the surface. But remember, while we're down there, we still have communications. We have shortwave radios, ham radios, all sorts of radio equipment that we can talk to the other side of the world. In fact, I'm sitting in San Diego. We'll still be able to talk to you.
Okay. That's good to know. And in terms of the people who are going to be in the bunkers, you did say, you know, that the hope is that things will calm down, people will emerge and you'll start all over again. Have you refused any people? Have anybody applied who's, you know, 96 and you're thinking, well, for God's sake, you got, you know, you only got a few years to live anyway. What's the point?
Well, we wouldn't discriminate by age because we feel that they bring something to the table as well, and that is wisdom. But so we our ages span from 1 year old at this point up to probably 80. But that said, people will die in vivos, you know, depending on the term, and they will also be born. In fact, I think we might have a baby boom 9 months after we all get in there. We do just decline people, and it's based on one simple rule, and that is if they're intolerant. And that means if they're intolerant of children, of dogs, of certain races, of certain religions, whatever it may be, if they can't get along with other people, then they don't belong in a shelter.
Do you think, Robert, it's a matter of when, not if?
Well, it looks like the win is getting closer every single day now. I mean, look at Korea and the Middle East and so on and so on, as well as the global economy, which is still very fragile, and many economists are calling for an economic collapse. But, you know, who knows what the wild guy over there in North Korea is going to do? Who knows what ISIS and the next attack will be somewhere in the UK or in the EU? It only takes one nuclear bomb to ruin our day and for us to head to shelter. So, it's only a question of when, not if. And quite at this point, you know, I can tell you that our sales and the interest level has skyrocketed. We're well over 1,000% increase this year over last, and we've had a steady increase year after year. So it's decision time. People are no longer sitting on the fence and screwing around. They're saying, wait a minute, I got to do this and do it now.
Robert Vecino is CEO of Vivos. Robert, thank you very much for speaking with us today.
My pleasure, Sean. Have a good day.
More interviews that make you go, on Moncrief, weekdays from 1:30.